By the way, if anybody wants to borrow a look at this nifty book by Feynman, which is Paul Tony Hay labored many years to get this out, because I remember when I was at Caltech, I had to go and find the students, try to find students who'd taken the course to get the notes. And so it's a sort of labor of love of Tony, who was a postdoc at Caltech when Feynman was alive, still alive. My main contribution to the course, I was executive officer for physics at the time, so I scheduled the course. I also gave a guest lecture on the Habercube, but the only real contribution I made was scheduling it. All right, so if you sort of analyze it, a computer, you have to be able to sort of prepare an input. You better be able to program it, which means you better be able to control what it does. You better be able to produce an answer in some sort of reliable fashion, and it better be and this is actually one of the criticisms of a quantum computer, in that these quantum wave functions that are going to be doing this computing are incredibly fragile, and it seems very, with current knowledge, it's very difficult to see how you control them and get reliable answers. But of course, if we're talking 50 years from now, almost anything can happen in 50 years if it's allowed by the laws of physics. So I think it's quite plausible that quantum computers will exist 50 years from now and be incredibly interesting. Anyway, so we better be reliable, and to be useful, at least on some important computations, it better be quicker than other techniques, and there better be some way of getting the answer, because there's not much point if it computes it and hides it from you. So those are really the only constraints that you have to manage. You have to be able to satisfy. As long as we think we're dealing with numbers, which is not necessary to have as a restriction, but at least we might as well restrict ourselves to manipulating numbers, which could of course be characters represented by numbers. Then we can suddenly think of everything as bit manipulation, and then it's well known, and say, for instance, explained in detail in the book, in the article by Feynman, that you can build arbitrarily complex arithmetic as long as you can find some way of doing a not function and some way of doing an and function. Once you do that, those circuits allow you to build arbitrarily complicated computers. And that's sort of, if you just look at a standard book on the LSI, they effectively say that. But of course, and in fact, if you look back at the beginning of the VLSI, which is really not too long ago, they were started off by just doing those types of circuits. So one neat thing about quantum systems, which is why you might even want to think about quantum computing, is that quantum systems certainly represent bits in a natural fashion, because if we take a neat, nice elementary particle or relatively elementary particle like an electron or a proton, then that has a spin, which is spin a half, so it's either up or down. So an electron carries a single bit of information just in its spin position. We can go a little higher up into atomic systems, and then we can have a hydrogen atom with an electron traveling around a proton. That hydrogen atom, that electron is in quantized orbits, which so you can have a bit represented by, is the electron in the lowest energy state or in a higher energy state? And as described, say, by Seth Lloyd, you can even read that by just impinging in the right energy photon on that electron, you can find out which energy state it's in. So because quantum physics is built around energy states and which are inherently discrete, quantum systems actually in many ways are intrinsically natural for bitwise arithmetic.